And you're very welcome back to Lifeline here on this Thursday morning. It's coming up to 5 minutes past 10. Now, I should be joined on the line by Tina Leonard. Good morning to you, Tina.
Good morning, Debbie. How are you?
I'm not too bad, Tina. And you're from the Alzheimer's Society of Ireland. We're going to talk this morning a little bit about mistreatment and abuse of people with dementia in residential care. I suppose before we start, could we just give a brief, for you on our information to people who don't really know what dementia is? I mean, a lot of people get dementia and Alzheimer's mixed up.
That's right. Yeah, so that's right. You're correct. So we should clarify that. So dementia is an umbrella term, and it's an umbrella term for lots of different illnesses or conditions that affect the brain, and the most common one is Alzheimer's. So Alzheimer's is a type of dementia, if you see what I mean. So Alzheimer's is the most common type of dementia. Other dementias that people will have heard of include vascular dementia, which is linked to the heart and strokes. Lewy bodies dementia is another one, frontal temporal lobe dementia. So there are lots of different types of dementia. Alzheimer's is the most common one in Ireland, and indeed in the Western world. But all different dementias, they all have a cognitive impact on the brain. So they all it means that there is a cognitive decline in different parts of the brain, and it makes everyday living and performing everyday functions more difficult. Dementia is progressive. It's important to say that as well. So people can live for anything from 2 to 20 years. You know, it depends on the person, depends on the type of dementia. There aren't set stages of progression of the illness. It's different for everybody. But as I said, they are common things in terms of cognitive impairment. And then in some cases, there might be language communication difficulties, language difficulties. In some cases, it might affect personality. There's lots of different types of things. As one person with dementia always has said to me, when you meet one person with dementia, you meet one person. You know, yeah. So everybody is different. But I mean, the other thing that's really important to say, Debbie, is that while it's a, you know, dementia is a catch-all to cover all the different types of dementia, really are an awful lot of people in Ireland. You know, we're talking about 48,000 people.
I was shocked to say when I read that, and I really wasn't expecting it to be that high, and it seems to be increasing. Why is it increasing, do you think?
It is. Well, it's increasing, and in fact, what the researchers tell us is that it's due to treble in a generation. So in a generation's time, there'll be 140-odd thousand. And the reason is, quite simply, is that we're living longer. So the main risk factor for getting dementia is age. And we're all aging and we're all living longer. So the more people you have that are older, the more incidences of Alzheimer's or other types of dementia you're going to get. So it's important to say that Alzheimer's or dementia isn't a normal part of aging. It's not a normal part of aging at all. It is an illness. And just because you're old doesn't mean you're going to get it. But age is the biggest risk factor. And that's why the more older people they are. And that's why it's really interesting to see in all of the developed countries in the Western world, this is a huge issue. This expecting the expectation of trebling the numbers and so on is the same across Europe, America, Australia and so on. But if you look at the third world countries, they don't have this issue at all. Why? Because people don't live as long. Nice. You know, so it's a world issue for a lot of the world, not just for Ireland. And so it's interesting to note that there is some world leadership on this as well. The G7 countries have got together and they've created the World Dementia Council looking for a cure and treatments. So at least there's some joined up thinking to use that well-worn phrase or some communication about this. Because, you know, back in 2012, the World Health Organization actually said that this was the biggest social issue of our time. You know, so we all, I think everyone listening today, you know, to this program will know somebody, whether in their family or a neighbour or a family member of a friend, everyone knows somebody who's affected by this.
Exactly. And is there treatment? I mean, is there anything to help?
There is.
People?
Yeah. There's no cure, though. Let's start by saying that. So as of yet, there is no cure. But it is important to say that there are treatments that people can benefit from. Not be cured, but certainly can benefit from. And one of the most important things is timely diagnosis. So long ago, a generation ago, even less, you know, doctors were often loath to diagnose, and people thought, why bother? There's nothing anyone can do. Wrong. There's a lot that you can do, and the sooner you're diagnosed in the progression of the illness, the better. So not to wait until things get really bad, but when you or a loved one notice things at the very beginning, so sooner into the progression than what we call a timely diagnosis, that's much better. Why? Because then you can start putting therapies in place that will help. Two, you can take medication. Not everyone, in about a third of the cases, there's medication that's suitable that can slow down some progressions. And then third, you can start planning for the future and planning for a situation when your cognitive impairment or your loved one's cognitive impairment will be worse. But the therapies I'm talking about, like things like cognitive stimulation therapy, cognitive rehabilitation therapy, it's about putting really simple practical strategies in place to enable you to live your life. So we work with people who are in the earlier stages, you know, who've had a timely diagnosis or in the earlier stages, and you would meet them walking down the street, you wouldn't know any difference at all, you know.
Yeah.
But they have lots of strategies in place to help get through the day. So even things like using notebooks to remind you where you are and where you're going to, notes all over the house, even to remind you who you're to call, where you're to go, you know, even things like you could have a note on the, know one woman who has a note on her cooker saying remember to use oven gloves because one time she forgot and she burned her hand. You know, so all that's, you know, using diaries and notebooks and writing things down. And all of this, it sounds very simple, but if someone goes through all those different strategies with you, then really you can get through the day and function better. And what that allows you to do as well then is keep living the way you were living, keep being involved in the community, keep meeting your friends, all of that stuff, and not retreat into your house and do nothing, which happens as well because people get really low after a diagnosis and people think my life is over. But with strategies in place, you can live your life, and the beauty is that never mind medication, but if you're socialising and getting and staying involved and being with your friends and going, you know, playing golf or whatever it was you were doing before, then you will stay, it's well proven that you will stay well for longer. So all of that is a really positive
question to you, Tina.
Yeah.
Has it been proven that people who kind of are more outgoing, I suppose, out there doing more active than, say, a person's at home all day doing, like, not working, not meeting as many people, would they be more prone to developing Alzheimer's?
Not necessarily more prone, but what has been proven that if you do have Alzheimer's or dementia and you remain involved, then that will, there was a UK study not that long ago, and it certainly showed that the benefits were almost as close as the benefits for people who were able to take medication. So that social element is very important, and we all know that from our own lives. If you're socialising with people, you get a lift, you know, so that staying involved is really, really important. Yet what you see sometimes is, you know, there's one woman I know, for example, on diagnosis, she went home and she didn't leave the house for a year, because she was depressed and she was down and she didn't know where to turn either. Mm. And that's the opposite of what's best for her health. You know, so it is very, very important. If you're talking about socialising in any case, it's good for us all. There are a number of risk factors, modifiable risk factors. Age is a risk factor that none of us can do anything about because we'll all get old. Hopefully we'll all get old. And then there's a very small genetic component, very small. It's only about 1% in Alzheimer's. There's nothing you can do about that. But there are other modifiable risk factors for sure. And you know what? They're the same risk factors that you'll have heard again and again in relation to all good health stuff. So it's about cardiovascular health, you know, good diet, exercise, not smoking, limiting your alcohol intake. All of those things will help keep your brain healthy as well. Now that's and they're just modifiable risk factors. None of us can say if you do this you won't get that. It's the same for any illness area or any disease, but if you want to do the best you can for yourself, then it's to stay healthy in your body, which will help stay healthy in your mind as well. And interestingly, looking at those risk factors that we can do something about, education and learning comes out as being very important, which is really interesting because if you've stayed in school and gone to college and all of that and have a job where you're thinking and you have to use your brain a lot, what you're doing is you're building up a cognitive reserve. You're building up a reserve that can ward against onset of some dementias. Now, again, that's a risk factor. So we can't say that, that doesn't mean that someone who's in a very high-powered job and is extremely smart won't get a diagnosis, you know? Of course not. But in all the research that's done, that's one key area, along with the healthy diet and the and not drinking too much and all of that, and the exercise. So look, I think we all know at this stage what healthy living is about. So if we do the best we can for ourselves, then
they
least
say
we're,
that, don't they? Healthy body, healthy mind, and I suppose
it's all connected.
It's all connected.
Yeah.
But what we're talking about today now as well is it's very sad and very upset reading about this that people are going through this, which is bad enough for them, and they're struggling with this, and then they've been abused as well. Some of it in the home, and some in residential care.
It is, Debbie, you're right. It's absolutely awful. And you just think to yourself, you know that most people are wonderful people, and you just think, who are these people that could be so awful? I mean, what we're talking about here is elder abuse. And within the HSE, you see, there is, they have a database of elder abuse, and elder abuse can be imported into that database by the HSE health workers, who are contacted by family members or whatever, or by the individual in case. And there's a range of elder abuse. And what we did was we looked at all of those cases that were in that database that related to somebody with dementia. And we found that there's a really strong link between elder abuse and dementia in this country. So, I mean, looking at the number of cases from 2010 to 2014, so you're talking about over 2,000 cases. And in a high percentage of cases, the perpetrators of the abuse were family members. Now, that's the same actually across all cases of abuse, whether it's someone with dementia or not. It's family members, which again is extraordinarily sad to think about. And looking at those abuse cases relating to people who had dementia, the biggest area was psychological abuse. And then that was followed by neglect and physical abuse. Yeah. And each is as bad as the next, you know. And he also then found, looking through these cases, that people with dementia were subject to what you could only call as financial swindles, being forced or misled into giving money and possessions away. That was in more than one in five of the cases, being forced to give money away. And remember, the majority perpetrated by family members. So this is very real. I mean, I'll give you an example.
It's
very disturbing, Debbie. I mean, this example I'm going to give you, it's anonymised now. That I'm not going to give you the person's name, but this man was in a nursing home and was cared for by staff. And he had an estranged relationship with his daughter. But the daughter arrived and advised that she was taking her father to live with her in Dublin without telling this man's wife, the daughter's mother. But she removed him from the nursing home. She took him to a bank, removed all of his funds, and changed the address to her address so that the pension would come to a post office near her in Dublin. And initially he stayed with the daughter, then she put him back into a nursing home. And she had taken over, basically, because this man had, was obviously in advanced stages of dementia, she was taking control of his financial affairs without telling other family members and abusing that relationship. It's basically stealing all his money. Like, absolutely, just absolutely tragic.
Absolutely.
And it's just one of a litany of cases, really, that are reported every year. And what we understand
from
HSE is that there are probably more.
Yeah, sorry for bunny, but do you know what's really kind of, which is the most shocking thing is, like, people like this in the vulnerable, I suppose, or elder, they're at their, as you said, their last stage of life. You think working all them years to have your few, bob in the bank, looked after your family, raised your family as best you could, that at the end of the day, they're the nearest people to you that you'll put your trust in, and to turn around and do something, it's shocking. It really is shocking, isn't it?
It's awful to hear, but we have to hear it, because we have to know that it happens, and this is what I'm talking about is very real. And you're right. I mean, somebody who has dementia, especially in the later stages, an older person can be much more susceptible to exploitation by others. And remember, their ability is going to be impaired in terms of being able to seek help or to ask for something themselves, or even remove themselves from a potentially abusive situation. That ability to do that is going to be impaired. Someone might be at a stage where they've lost speech, or someone mightn't have a clear picture of what is going on, or someone might not be able to express that, might not be able to find find the words. So what's really, really important is that all of us are aware that this does happen, and that for people, first of all, healthcare workers, whether in residential care or elsewhere, are specifically dementia trained to understand best how to communicate and understand what's happening, and also trained, there are elder abuse programs that you can train in as well, also trained in that, to understand the signs and look for what's happening. But it's not just healthcare workers, it's all of us. And if you take, for example, I said 1 in 5, there's a case of financial abuse. What we need is a bit of responsibility in the community as well. And in banks and financial institutions, for there to be standards across, standard processes in place across the banking system that protects people. So you need staff to be trained. You can't expect a staff member to assume that something is going on, or to assume that someone has dementia. You know, that's putting too much onus on the person. But what you can have is a banking system that's better equipped to support people with dementia, exactly, to manage their money safely. You know, by you having training in place so that people understand what dementia is and what could possibly happen, to understand that elder abuse, people with dementia happens, and then to have processes and checks in place to make sure that the situation I highlighted there doesn't happen without proper checks first, and then the checks would have revealed that something is amiss here. So it's about dementia specific training and making our communities dementia friendly, you know, so the businesses play a role, but all of us do as well, because I mean, we said earlier that all of us know somebody, and it might be a neighbour that you just might want to keep your eye on. And to do that, you know, find out a little bit more about dementia first and understand what the person's issues are going to be. You know, maybe someone's living in their own home. You know, so don't we all really, if we're talking about, you know, living in communities and looking after each other, have a responsibility to know what's happening in our communities and support those who are more vulnerable, you know? So it could be in the community, and then the healthcare staff watching people, minding people in nursing homes as well. So there is a lot we can do. And there's another, there's also a piece of legislation called the Assisted Decision Making Bill, capacity legislation, and it is due to come in. It went through the committee stages recently, and that will make a difference, because basically it's going to replace the wards of court system, and this will give an assumption of capacity to people with dementia and give more respect, I suppose, and human rights to people with dementia and other people whose capacity is impaired. So obviously, so we hope that the government will pass that and enact that as soon as possible, because that will change the legal situation as well. Mm-hmm. So like in the case I outlined to you, that man had been made a ward of court, you know, and that means every single matter relating to his life is made by a court. So under the new system, that system will be gone. It's a very old-fashioned system, and we'll have a system where, you know, capacity is assumed, unless it's proven otherwise, and plans are put in place for responsible people to make different decisions in different ways. So it's much more reasonable, you know.
Yeah.
So there's lots of things that we can do, because this, and it's difficult to hear, as you said, Debbie, but we have to hear it to know that
we
it's there
know,
and what
yeah,
we can do
to... On, yeah.
Yes,
and one more thing, Tina, people, to say like 63% of people are living with dementia, live in that home, in their own
homes.
Right. Now,
that's
is there
right.
any help and support for family members? I know what we're hearing is terrible, but I'd say, you know, sometimes maybe the family member is probably at their wit's end as well, and they're finding it very hard. Maybe it could be just left one member of the family that has to take over everything, and maybe they just can't cope anymore, and sometimes that's why this happens, which it shouldn't happen, but it does.
Yeah.
Is there any help for them to
There is. I mean, it's very important that you bring up the family carer, because it's the other side of the coin, you know. Mm. And there are 50,000 dementia family carers in Ireland, so it's a huge number of people that we also really need to support. And you support the carer, you support the person with dementia, you support the person with dementia, you support the carer. Mm. So it's both. And in terms of supports for the carer, I mean, first of all, if they're at home and they're looking after a loved one, then hopefully they'll have some package from the HSE that will give them home care support, and they'll be able to get some home care hours, because that supports them as well. We run day centres right around the country, and hopefully someone could go to that for a few hours or a few days, a week, whichever, and that gives respite to the carer as well. We also have 2 respite centres. Again, the carer then getting a break when the person with dementia is having the week in the respite centre. But for specifically for carers then as well, in the community, we run social clubs and Alzheimer cafes, and and they're places where the person with dementia and carer can come along to meet other people who are living with the diagnosis as well, and chat and have a cup of tea and all of that. And they're really nice social outlets for both. For carer specifically, we also run carer training programs, and we also have carer support groups. So there's a lot there, and what I would suggest is that anyone listening who wants to find out more can go to our website, which is alzheimer.ie, or they could call our helpline. It's open Monday to Saturday, and if I could give that number,
yeah,
Debbie,
please do.
It's 1800 341 341. So that's open Monday to Saturday, 1800 341 341, and just anyone can give us a call and find out what supports are specifically in your area for yourself. And you're absolutely right. For the carer, it's very important. Study after study has shown the impact on the health of the carer, you know. So it's important to look after yourself as well, and to get that support, the psychological and social support, where possible, and look after your health as well. So call our helpline to find out what's there, and access anything you can. That's what I would say, you know, to make sure that life is as easy as you can make it. Yeah.
Okay, well, listen, Tina, thanks for talking to us here this morning.
Lovely to talk
to you, Debbie. Got some, I suppose, information of if they are or recently been diagnosed with dementia or a family member. The number I'll give out again is 1-800-341-341, and I'll give that out throughout the. We do a notice up on that. So, Tina, thanks for talking to us here this morning, and we'll talk to you again very soon. Okay.
Thanks, Debbie.